Keep cool this summer when you shop ceiling fans at Menards. Upgrade your space with a quick install ceiling fan from Patriot Lighting. They're loaded with extra features that will make your ceiling fan install a breeze. Plus, they reduce energy costs, helping you save time and money. Save big on our great selection of ceiling fans. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at today on The Grave Talks, Funeral Family, a conversation with John Moore. Telling your classmates that you live in a funeral home is a rather interesting way for John Moore to gain friends. However, it was his reality. It was a reality that involved him and his family seeing and sometimes communicating with his great-grandfather, the funeral home founder. These experiences would drive John to explore the paranormal world and try to identify more than just what goes bump in the night. This is his story.
Well, for me, it actually has been pretty much my whole life. I was born on the East Coast to a family of undertakers. So I actually grew up inside a funeral home.
Wow.
Yeah, my great-grandfather always said that the dead don't bother us because we're the ones who see their final dignity in life with being funeral directors.
Okay.
So it's always been a big thing in my family, the paranormal. So that's one good thing I had. My first experience with it was actually when I was 8 years old in that funeral home because my great-grandfather I never met. He died 3 months before I was born.
Mm-hmm.
But one night I was there with my father after they had a service that night. I think it was just a wake. I can't remember exactly because it's been so long. But he was cleaning up in the chapel area, and I was just in the lobby looking down the stairs to where we have the showcase for the coffins. And I saw an older gentleman at the bottom of the stairs. He waved and smiled. I waved back, said hi, and then he moved off out of sight of the stairs. So that's when my father came out and asked me, who was I talking to? I told him there was a guy downstairs. So he went down and looked, obviously couldn't find anyone. So we went. It was a few years later, looking at an old family album, that I actually saw a picture of the man I had seen. And it turned out that was my great-grandfather who had died before I was born.
And he had been an undertaker there? Was he the one who started the business?
Yes, he was the one who founded the business.
Okay. Wow.
So it was it's always, and funny story, that we no longer have the funeral home. It's now an adult learning annex.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody who's in that area in the basement, they still report seeing him, feeling a presence and things like that inside that building. That's definitely a place I've had my on my bucket list that I want to go investigate one day. So
I would imagine. So after you had this experience, like immediately after you see this, you tell your dad, he goes and looks, there's nobody there. Does your dad suspect that you had seen a ghost?
He figured it was probably just, like I said, my whole family has really been into these the paranormal for my whole life.
Sure.
So he kind of also believed, maybe what I saw was my grandfather or something. Mm-hmm.
So in this atmosphere growing up, and you say your family has been very into it, I want to ask first, what was it like? I mean, that atmosphere of being in a funeral home, you're surrounded by death. That is the business. How did that affect you? I mean, just take paranormal out of the equation, just psychologically, and the way you viewed death and things in that kind of macabre world versus, how other kids saw it when you were at school and talking to them. How would you describe the difference in mindset that you had versus them?
It's definitely a different mindset for sure. I could go when I'm at a funeral now, it doesn't bother me as much as say somebody else, just because I'd been around it so long.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not heartless. I do still feel the sadness and all that, the loss. But at the same time, it's a little more natural for me than most people.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people will go into a funeral home and they feel nervous. They feel a little scared because they're not used to it. They don't know what to expect. It's just so many negative emotions that come up with the idea of why you're there that it's something that people project. But for me, it was just something normal. So it really didn't faze me. It would be like you walking into your studio for me.
Sure. I completely understand. When you have, like you said, the family that really, you know, they were into this, and you have that sort of setting, and you were 8 when you had that first experience. How did things progress from there as a child, as you continued to, you know, learn that your family, you know, this is what they do, but they obviously also see the other side of it, too? Tell me some more experiences that you had, you know, shortly thereafter.
Well, to be honest, I didn't really have too many shortly thereafter.
Okay.
I was rather young then, so my family wasn't so into the idea of ghosts and monsters for an 8-year-old.
Sure. Okay.
So they basically kept me out of that for quite a while. Although there would always be like comments from, like, you know, things my grandfather used to say and things like that. But when I was 15 when I had my next experience at a family home. And that's when I really started researching and looking into things. Like, I would get hold of basically what happened there. We were living at a house which over 2,000 people have seen this ghost in it. The ghost of Mr. Farmer is what everyone calls him. He was the owner of the house who died in one of the upstairs bedrooms. I believe it was in the 40s or 50s.
Mm-hmm.
But he had been seen frequently in the picture window by people driving by. And we actually had a handprint on that window that we couldn't wash off. Like, it was permanently there.
Wow.
So I remember one day I was downstairs in the living room. The big window is in the dining room right behind it. And as I was, I'd fallen asleep on the couch and I woke up. It was probably somewhere around 2:30, 3 o'clock. Mm. I turned around and sure enough, I saw old Mr. Farmer standing there. He turned his head, looked at me, and then he just vanished. So it was at that point that I started looking into things a little more seriously, and I started getting my hands on any book I could that dealt with parapsychology, paranormal, things like that.
Are you thinking at this point these are definitely ghosts? Are you looking for other logical possible explanations? Where's your mind at?
At this point, I was looking to try and figure out what I had seen. Mm-hmm. Like, I was thinking, you know, was I dreaming this? Was I still only half awake? Is there actually somebody in my house? Like, this is where my mind went right at the very first onset of it.
Yeah.
But then once he faded away, it was, okay, what the heck just happened? So that's why I began looking into it. And yeah, I do believe that they were, at the time, I did believe they were spirits.
Okay.
Again, it didn't scare me.
Sure. Sure. And I want to hear more about as things progress, but I also want to hear some more observations about the funeral home. And you had said that others have likely seen your grandfather there as well. What other experiences did you learn that your family had there as you got older, when they became more open to talking about such experiences and such? And I'm also curious about guests at the funeral home that were, you know, coming to visit and say their final goodbyes to their loved ones as well. Was there any encounters within any of those groups?
To my knowledge, I don't think very many of the guests actually experienced anything. At least none have come forward and given me any that I've been told of. I know my father and my grandfather used to have experiences frequently, especially in the chapel area when they'd be setting up.
Mm-hmm.
They would always go back and things would be moved around, and they would always just joke that it was great-grandfather didn't like how they were setting up again. Mm-hmm. So there was frequently things being moved like that. I do know some of the offices, the embalming room, a lot of the times things would move as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of that going on. I don't know if they actually saw anything. I know my grandfather, before he passed, mentioned that he had once thought he had seen something in the basement, but he wasn't. He was more of a rational man,
mm-hmm.
So he wouldn't come right out and say that he was seeing a ghost, but he believed he did see something down there moving.
So the occurrences actually predate the passing of him.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
But they were from my great-grandfather.
Oh, your great-grandfather. Okay, I apologize. Your great-grandfather. Yeah. So this is something I'm assuming he was very passionate about and enjoyed doing.
Yeah.
Okay. Because that's usually obviously why someone would want to continue haunting or continue to be in a place of what they, you know, what they were passionate about in life. The idea of a funeral home and it being haunted, it's an easy one, I guess, on the surface to kind of grasp at and go, oh, sure, a funeral home. But when you think of it, you know, other than the people who are operating it, that's not necessarily a place that many people frequently visit. It is, though, a place of very high emotion and such while people are going through the grieving process of their loved ones. When you look back on this, and this is just opinion based, if you were to say, you know, the building is haunted, who would you do you think it's more so your great grandfather that would be haunting it? Or do you think there may be other spirits there as well, even pertaining to some of the people who had their services there?
You see, the only one I could see that would truly be haunting it would be my great-grandfather, mm-hmm. because it was his passion. It was his business that he started. Mm-hmm. I do believe that. Other activity in there, though, I could see very easily, because like, as you mentioned, the amount of emotion that comes when you're in those buildings is just through the roof, right?
Yeah.
The sadness, the anger. There's so many different emotions that come through that, yeah, having some sort of almost like a thought form, like a poltergeist type activity,
yeah.
Something from parapsychology that they would talk about is the psi energy. The strong emotions like that would generate such psi outbursts. So it would be possible that when people are there, that something like that would occur.
And that's an interesting one. And I'd like you to talk more about that. It's something I've been talking about a lot lately on the show. Just the idea of us being able to almost haunt ourselves. Especially in times of very high emotion, times where we're trying to deal with trauma, things of that nature, PTSD, all of that. Sometimes I wonder, you know, of course, there's the things where we're, you know, almost objects, energy, things are turning lights on and off. And is it always necessarily something else that was attracted to that energy? Or is it our own energy just kind of going out there in waves and affecting things around us?
Personally, I find it's a lot of the time it's our own energy being projected out.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've studied parapsychology for a long time. That's what generally was my first focus.
Yeah.
And with that, a lot of it is the psi outburst. So I know like on a few of our cases here in Ottawa, we've had times where people would call us. I would go in and my first thought is to talk to the family, see what's going on, because we're looking for a commonality of who could be the one where this outburst is coming from. Before I start looking at, okay, do we have an actual spirit haunting the place?
Mm-hmm.
And in most cases, we do find that there is a human factor involved where some sort of a trauma of either, you know, a loved one lost, some sort of decision that they didn't make, just things like that. We always find one of those involved. And generally, that's what getting that person to speak to a counselor of some sort or something, generally that's what resolves most of our most of the cases we've been dealing with. And especially right now during this pandemic, mm-hmm. everywhere you look, there's so much going on. People are so stressed with everything that's happening. And cases, like the number of cases we have coming in are just going through the roof.
Yeah.
And most of them I can clear as day point right out. Like it's guaranteed it's the stress of this causing these psi outbursts.
Mm-hmm. And that's interesting. Is that commonly what you believe it is when people are having activity that would be related to that, when they're thinking, oh, this is, you know, something's being attracted to my energy? Is that something as well, though, where someone may be very depressed, someone maybe going through something very difficult? We always hear the thoughts and the stories that, well, sometimes that's what will bring, you know, something passing by over to you, something negative quite often. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's evil, but attracting negative energy. Is that something as well that happens in tandem with psi outbursts? Or is it either or an either or situation?
It can be. It's really hard to say because we're working in hypotheticals, right?
Yeah.
So, but it can be. Yeah, there are certain entities out there. Like people love to talk about like demons and things. They are attracted to those negative energies as well. So that is a possibility that it could happen.
Mm-hmm.
But the same thing would happen to clear it. You basically have to identify the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And get this person the help they need to deal with that. And by doing that, often, if it is their own outburst or if it is something that's been drawn to it, taking that part that it's feeding out of the equation generally resolves it.
And that would usually involve work with the individual. It's not necessarily an investigator or a priest or a demonologist coming in and saying a prayer and saging something or throwing holy water on something. It involves work within the individual that is either attracting that energy to them or is just suffering with the trauma of what they're dealing with and trying to get to a positive place.
That's absolutely correct, yes.
No, it's a very interesting world when we get into that. And I think it's something that should be examined more and more. When you look back at the years in the funeral home, and I know you're curious about what it's like today with the Adult Education Center and such, what would you be searching for specifically? What questions do you have about that location? From just being yourself, from being someone who spent so much time there?
I'd probably just want to talk to my grandfather, like my great-grandfather, see what he thinks of what they've done with the place, see what he thought of when we lost it, just to see what kind of responses I would get. I mean, it's not every day you get to investigate some place where the haunting is actually a direct member of your family.
Sure.
So it's just, I'd be curious to see what kind of interaction I would actually be able to get from it with him.
Sure. Tell me more about your experiences after the age of 15 and as you got to be a young adult and such. Where did it transpire from there in terms of your interest, your involvement, and experiences that you were having?
Well, after that, I basically spent most of my high school years like researching and things like that. I was already the creepy kid from the funeral home, so I kind of tried to keep it under wraps a little bit, you know. I didn't get too many dates in high school, as you can imagine.
Sure, unless they were all gothed out. It's like, yeah, you like the goth girls? Go for it.
Not in small town New Brunswick.
True, there's probably not many there, yeah.
No, but it was a lot of reading, like anything I could get my hands on from like Hans Holzer, Lloyd Orbach, Ed and Lorraine Warren, people like that. Anything I get my hands on and read, I would. So I was trying to just gain as much knowledge as I could. I did go out a few times trying to do investigations at places where I could gain access to. There weren't too many, of course.
Sure.
Mostly it was just I would try to do it in my house. Or I worked cleaning a church once, so I did a few there, just mock one to see what would happen. Generally didn't get too much... didn't catch too much doing that, unfortunately. But no, it was wasn't until I moved up to Ottawa that I actually was able to start investigating, getting out and actually going places where there was true activity, true haunted locations, and trying to research the locations, trying to gain as much as I could and actually start investigating into those. So they were we've had some really good ones up here, I know that. And there's been some that we've been into where we've been able to debunk partially that what people have claimed.
Let's talk about some of them where, tell me about the first one that you went into as an investigator, when you were, you know, kind of taking it up a notch and it wasn't, you know, just you kind of by yourself after, you know, moments of cleaning the church or things in your house. What was it like? What was your first investigation that really kind of made you go, wow, this is really interesting? And it may not chronologically have been your first investigation, but the first one in your timeline that really did stand out to you.
The first one I did that really stood out, I had joined a team here in Ottawa, and we were visiting a place about an hour and a half east of the city. The house was was an older building, had a lot of history. We had a psychic on the team, and he actually mentioned how he believed that he could see someone in the garage and thought it used to be a store, which he turns out he was absolutely correct. It was at one point a general store in there. We were, and the people had reported seeing an elderly man in the window frequently. We didn't get to see that, of course, but later on in the evening, I remember watching monitors while one team was down in the basement area. One of the claims was there's a keyboard, and it would frequently just start playing "Oh Susanna," like, you know how you can press the button and they'll play a song or whatever.
Yeah,
it would do that at random all the time for them. So one of the investigators was down there, And he started to say, so I hear you like Oh Susanna. So he started to sing it, and he asked, you know, can you keep it going? And we caught the faint child female voice singing it on the EVP recorder.
Oh, wow.
We also had a video, which at first, like, I personally don't believe orbs are of any use in the paranormal. Most of them, because there's too many possible reasons for it.
Sure.
But we did have one that came. I thought it was just a bug. Came in and it flew over top of our investigator's head about 2 feet. It did a circle and then vanished. And as it did, he moved forward and actually told the other two with him that something had just touched the back of his head. Now, it wasn't this bug, because I could see it clearly. It was 2 feet over his head.
Mm-hmm.
And then about 5 minutes later, we saw just this ball of light appearing on the monitor above his head. And it shot out of the room. And when it shot out of the room, he actually said that he had been touched again. So for me, that was one of the first investigation where actually I actually saw something, and it was just such a rush.
Sure. I mean, how are you processing it at this point? Obviously, you've already had the interest here. I'm assuming you already, you know, you believe that these things exist. But then to get this stuff on camera, to get some evidence of it, to get some validation of it, other than just, you know, you're by yourself and you have an experience. What was that like for you? How are you processing that?
At the time, I was on pure adrenaline, to be honest.
Sure.
So it was really like really exciting to actually see this stuff in real life, like just to be there and experience it firsthand and to actually see it.
Mm-hmm.
Like we both know, like, video evidence is incredibly rare.
Mm-hmm.
And like I honestly don't believe orbs myself, but that time there, we had it occurring with something else at the same time. So I'm kind of looking at it like, okay, this is a little bit harder to explain. Like,
sure. Well, I mean, and you're right. Orbs are something that are, you know, very easy to debunk, and they can show up at so many random times and places. I think they're there. I just think it's almost like, where's Waldo? Like, which one is the actual orb that is some sort of energy and not a light refraction?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And yeah, that's kind of where I'm on that. But so you have these experiences, you're running on adrenaline and you're excited. When you began doing this as an investigator, personally, what was your goal for it? Was it to help people? Was it to just gain information? Where were you on that?
Mine has been pretty much a mixture of the two. Like, I always want to help people, because there's so many people dealing with this and they don't know what they're dealing with. And maybe it goes back to when I was in the funeral home and I would see, like, people, everyone there is crying, they're sad. I would see my friends coming in to bury their grandparents and things, and I'd be trying to comfort them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just something that I've always had. I've always been one of those that wants to help people. So that's a big part of it.
Sure.
Being able to go in, help these people be comfortable in their home again, help them understand what's actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. And at the same time, it's just the curiosity I have. Like, I'm still curious, like, what is this? How is this all happening? So it's just trying to see what more I can learn and what more I can siphon off from all of this, basically.
How do you determine where you go and investigate?
Wherever it lets us, really.
Well, is it one of the things where you have people contacting you and they're wanting you to come out to their place? Or is it you reaching out to, you know, specific locations and saying, I'd like to go and investigate here because we've heard about the activity?
We do a little bit of both. We do have frequently, I probably get about 10, 20 emails a day from people locally asking for us to investigate.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those, they don't make it beyond just a phone call, because you can tell sometimes some of them are just unstable.
Yeah.
Or there's something else going on that they need to deal with. So mm-hmm. It's not really worth us getting involved.
Sure.
But on occasion, we do get the few where we would go in and set up, like, we would go do a pre-case investigation just to meet with them, see the house, see what's going on. And then from there, we may schedule to come back and set up a full investigation if we think it's necessary. So we do also do a lot of locations as well. We two of my investigators actually handle that part. They contact different supposedly haunted locations around the city and see if they'll let us come in and check out what's going on for them.
What are some of the locations in Ottawa where you are that you have been able to go into that were really on your list? Especially out of curiosity of wondering what would it be like to be there and what did you experience?
Oh, one of the best ones within the city, I would say, was the Bytown Museum. We got to go in there one time. Sadly, they didn't want to come out and play that night.
Okay.
But it is one of the most haunted buildings in the city. Other ones we did were just east of the city. Like, we do a lot outside of the city because, being a government town, a lot of places don't like the stigma attached with the paranormal.
Okay.
So, but some of the places we did outside, we've been to a couple of community centers that were rather interesting. We caught one used to be a seminary, if I remember correctly, and an orphanage.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually caught a child's voice in a basement saying, "Awesome." So that was a really interesting one. We've also been to a couple of mills. Watson's Mill is a big one here in Ottawa. It's well known it was the owner's wife. They had just married. They were visiting the mill. Her dress got caught in the milling equipment, and it slammed her into the wall, killing her instantly.
Wow.
So, her spirit's been seen frequently in the mill. When we were there, we did hear something walking on the stair on the floor above us on the second floor, while nobody was up there. So that was quite an experience that night.
What sort of tactics are you using? What do you find to be some of the most effective things to bring out spirits in a way that doesn't necessarily need to be picked up on camera or video or audio, but where maybe you'll actually sense them through equipment or just literally audibly there or visibly? Is there anything that you've seen tends to produce better results than others?
It's really hit or miss, to be honest. Like, we go into some locations and they'll decide they want to come out and play. Others, they won't. Mm-hmm. Like, best thing to do is to know who you're going to try and contact, so that way you can find something that they'll be interested in interacting with. Because, I mean, if you're going into a place looking for, say, children, we would bring trigger objects like toy cars, balls, things like that, to see if we can get the child to come out and interact.
Mm-hmm.
We did another one at a place called Morehouse, nearby Ottawa, where we brought the young girl there died. She was the avid piano player, so we brought a keyboard with us and set the keyboard up and told her, we heard you're a good pianist. Can you play us something? And mm-hmm. lo and behold, the keyboard actually started playing. It was really freaking insane that. But yeah, it boils down to knowing who you're trying to contact there, mm-hmm. so that you can find something that would pique the interest of the spirit you're trying to interact with.
What's your it's innocent sounding when we're talking about a child, and let's put a keyboard out, let's put a toy truck out, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. That's all well and good, and I think that's a great idea. What about when you're in a situation where maybe it wasn't such a good ghost that's there, or maybe if they're suspecting it was a horrible person that once lived there, maybe did horrible things? Do you entice that ghost, and I'm not saying by taunting them, but I'm talking about with objects, do you put out pictures of a victim? Do you put out a murder weapon? Do you put out things like that to try and entice them to communicate? I don't believe in like shouting and yelling and saying horrible things to ghosts, but when we're talking about trigger objects, is that something that is done, or is that fair game, or is that never a good idea? Just an opinion.
If you have a negative ghost like that, it may not be such a good idea to try and antagonize them with those types of things.
Okay.
But that being said, I have done it on a few occasions just to see if we could actually get some sort of interaction, to see if this is genuinely who we're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
One that we would do too is, especially if you got, say it's a gentleman who was always having trouble with women, we would send in a team of all girls, say, to see if they'll get a better reaction from it than, say, me being there, and he may not want to interact with me because I'm a man.
Sure.
But these girls that are there, he used to always pick fights with them and things like that, mm-hmm. so he may want to interact more against them. Mm-hmm. So we've done that frequently on some of our cases.
What do you see when you're trying to communicate with something? Do you tend to get a better reaction or more communication with something that is more positive or more negative?
More positive, generally.
Yeah.
But again, it depends a lot on the circumstance. Like if you go into a place where, say, somebody died from a fire, mm-hmm. you could try having a candle burning. That could be considered a negative way of doing it, but they may interact with that candle by trying to put it out or something along those lines.
Interesting. When we're talking about investigating, and you had mentioned several occurrences where you've heard a child's voice singing at one time, saying awesome, likely playing a child's piano. As an investigator that's out there, and this is just, again, an opinion question for how you handle things, what do you feel when you hear the child's voice? As an investigator, is it your job just to try and document this and realize and say, yes, this is here? Is there a responsibility there to try and help that child? What is the role of an investigator in something like that?
I find generally the role of an investigator when you find something like that is to look at the situation and what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, you know, maybe you may want to try and help them, but they may not need help.
Mm-hmm.
They may be there because that's where they chose to be. That's where they want to be. Like they have some sort of an emotional connection to that place. So who are we to go in to somebody's house and remove a spirit where that spirit wanted to be there?
Mm-hmm.
And the needs of the living have to outweigh somewhat, but at the same time, I prefer when I go in to try and find a way for everyone to coexist mm-hmm. rather than just try to force something out.
That wraps up the first part of our conversation with John. In part two, what was his reaction when he hears children's voices while investigating? Should the investigator do anything to help? Has John ever been involved in helping someone remove a spirit from a location? Why do some spirits stick around and some seem to move beyond? What are some of the most reliable ways of getting verbal communication from the dead, in John's opinion? That and more in part two. Until next time for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.
Ahora en McDonald's, te puedes llevar un $5 McChicken Meal Deal o un $6 McDouble Meal Deal. Así, hay algo para todos. Llévate más por tu dinero con tu Meal Deal. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.